Who would be a water spud, eh?
On goes Paul. Seaford might yet win it here for Wolves. Flaps in the shot. What a goal!
This is an advertisement from BetterHelp Therapy Online. We all carry different stresses, big and small. It could be from work, stuff going on at home, or just from supporting a football team you flatter to deceive, and as the bedsheets have always said, let us down. We often bottle up these stresses and try and keep a lid on them, but when you do that, it can start to affect you negatively. That's where therapy comes in. It gives you a place to get these things off your chest, get down to root cause, and figure out how to work through what's weighing you down. Therapy is there to help develop positive coping skills. It's not just for people who have experienced major trauma. It's about empowering you to be the best version of yourself. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, why not look and give BetterHelp a try? It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible and suited to your schedule. With over 1,000 therapists in the UK already, BetterHelp can provide access to mental health professionals with a wide variety of expertise in mental health. Our listeners can get 10% off their first month using the code betterhelp.com/wanderers. That's betterhelp.com/wanderers. Let's get back to the show. Hello and welcome everybody to today's episode of Wolves Fancast. We're in the bloody quarterfinals, gents.
Never in doubt, was he?
Never in doubt against the stripy teams. Is the curse officially broken, or does it not count because they weren't in blue and white?
That was their fault.
Exactly. Yeah. Look,
they had every opportunity.
Yeah, they could have done. They can't. It's not our fault. Brighton can't rock an away kit in the same way Wolves can, in terms of how we're doing in our red kit this season. Anyway, I'm joined by Stu and Ed today to, of course, talk about Wolves beating Brighton at home in the FA Cup, which has set us up very nicely for a potential Wembley appearance in a few weeks' time if we can navigate our way past Coventry. We're also going to be talking a bit about Newcastle over the weekend because football just carries on regardless of however you're feeling. But it's great to have you join us with us if you're watching on YouTube live or if you're watching it back, of course, or if you're listening to us on podcasts as well. Let's get right into it, fellas, because it did feel like going into the game and the days building up to it, there wasn't a whole lot of hype going into it and people were kind of questioning whether it's worth going and, you know, what it kind of means to, I guess, be a supporter.
I mean, we'll get to Ed. As a man who enjoys a meal or two, as I do as well, would you ever starve yourself to watch a match?
I mean, look at me. No. No, and that I'm not on.
Let's be honest. Look at all three of us. Between us, do you think we've ever turned down a McGrill?
I'm not on Twitter, but I'm aware of the furore that was around it. But no, nothing should stop you. Whatever your pastime, your hobby, whatever it is, your passion shouldn't get in the way of your three square meals a day, right?
I mean, it shouldn't. I mean, look, it's really tricky, and I appreciate that via the Fancast. We have a global reach, by which I mean we've got about 15 people who listen in America who we love dearly, who we have met in person. And I struggle to, I don't know, when it comes down to that, oh, well, I'm more of a real fan because I go to X amount of games. I do sometimes struggle with it. And, you know, particularly when it comes to cup matches where you might spend your 600 plus quid now on and Canada. Yes, of course. We've got listeners all over the place. But yeah, I whether it's a cost of living thing or whatever, you know, it's, I think sometimes it can be difficult to emotionally reconcile
spending an evening watching Wolves when you might have other things going on in your life. But yeah, I mean, I think that there's kind of two sides to it, but I'll let you talk first, you, because I think me and you had the same opinion about the silliness.
I mean, the fact that, I mean, Judah mentioned this as well and didn't, he's already blocked him years ago. So I was keen. I ain't blocking him because you've got to see this stuff here. I mean, it's an absolutely ridiculous thing to say, but at the same time, I think it's hard for people who are absolutely obsessed with Wolves, and me saying I'm not looking at my room here. If you go back 15, 20 years, when I did about 3 or 4 years where I went to every game home and away, and that cost about $4,000 then. And it's outrageous, isn't it? It's silly. But I think you just got to accept that people are different levels of fandom, and that not everyone is a super fan. I'm not saying I'm a super fan anymore. I was at one time, but I'm not anymore. And I'll probably miss four away games this season. I missed six or seven last year. But that's just one of them things. People have got actual lives, and people are not as lucky as we are, especially in this country, because, I mean, if you're not lucky enough to be born in England, it's unfortunate. But if you are around the world and you are like Mike Evans there saying, some of us have work commitments later in the day, not a 9 to 5, for example, you're not going to book a day off to watch Wolves playing Brighton, especially when it's on iPlayer anyway. You're not going to do that, are you?
Oh, no, don't worry, because I'm pretty sure I saw a number of years ago the brother of a certain somebody on Twitter did say that he actually selected his career and job around being able to still watch Wolves.
I mean, that's what I did. I literally did that.
Yeah.
But the point is, not everyone is like us. I mean, some of us are insane. I completely accept that. But we're not the norm. But at the same time, people have got different interests. I love the Jets. They're awful. They're terrible. But if it's a clash between a Jets game and a Wolves game, I'm going to watch the Wolves game because they're like he said himself, he's whoever he supports in an American sense. He's a fan of that. He's not a supporter. And the whole thing of the names and whatever, it doesn't really matter. But where he did have a point was, if you are one of them people who can't be asked, who can afford it and can't be asked, but then come moaning and crying when you can't get a ticket, then that's on you. That's the problem. But that amount of people is so minute anyway, and everyone knows who they are regardless. The whole thing is pointless. It's silly. But the same thing is, if that was against Man City or Liverpool last night, or Man United maybe, it would have sold out.
Yeah.
But ironically enough, people who could be asked and who did turn up, we probably had the best atmosphere in the last 10 minutes for the last 5 years. So there we are.
Yeah. I think that's the nail on the head for me. I mean, it's silly, and like, you can't take anything you see on social media particularly seriously. And we all had a lovely bit of fun and games with it all, don't get me wrong. But I do get the underlying point around, like, you know, if that was against Man United or Liverpool for placing the quarterfinals, knowing that if we beat them, we could have, you know, a decent draw, and we got a pretty favourable one, it turned out. But yeah, it's silly. I mean, I'm not going to go into everyone's personal backgrounds and things like that, but you know, I couldn't justify going last night for all the reasons above. You know, I've been at work all day. I wouldn't have, basically, I wouldn't have seen my kids for the entire day, which, hey, for some people might think that's great. And I usually agree with them. But at the same time, you know, we all kind of have different views in terms of how we should be doing things, and say, of other interests as well. And like, you know, I realised when I went off to, like, very good friend of mine who goes home and away, and has done for what, over a decade now, he picked where he was going to university based on still being able to come back to the Midlands. Well, you only went to Birmingham. Whereas, you know, I went off to sunny Aberystwyth and realised, actually, after know, a couple of weeks, I wasn't massively missing watching Wolves every other week. But it happens, and, you know, say sometimes life gets in the way of it. But it's ironic that yesterday, and whether it was that we knew the cup draw before the match and that gave us that extra bit of spice, or, you know, we scored early or whatever, it did seem like all of a sudden that atmosphere changed. And maybe it was the fact that the people who were there really wanted to be there, and we kind of had that moment, I guess. But yeah, I think sometimes social media is a bit silly, isn't it?
I mean, people are asking in the comments about the attendance. It wasn't announced, it wasn't put on the screen. Being there, I'd guess it was, and seen many, many games in the Championship over the years where it didn't sell out, I'd guess it was round about 25, 26,000, something like that, which is amazing considering how few it was on a few days earlier.
According to Brighton, on their official club website, that can't be right. They're saying 23,800.
No, that's bollocks.
No, ain't gone.
No,
there was more than that.
Yeah, because you had the little patches in the Steve Bull upper, you had the wings of the Billy Wright, that little section of probably about 1,000, well, probably about 800 that they didn't sell, and the quadrant as well. So that is not 7,000-8,000 tickets.
Yeah, so just reporting what's on there on the Brighton Club's website. I will see if I can fact check it.
23,800.
Yeah.
Someone's saying it was on the screen. There we are.
Someone's okay. So 23,000 is.
It seemed a lot more than that.
Yeah. But I know it did feel like at least the atmosphere was right when it kind of came down to it. And I say, whether that's because we knew that we had a home tie against low league opposition in the quarterfinals of a cup when we were top half of the league and flying high. I don't know. But you're right. Like, you know, even watching an iPlayer, it was. You could feel the atmosphere, and it was starting to get really pumped up, and exactly what you want from a game. I mean, I was a bit confused/potentially concerned about the starting lineup because, you know, there were four changes, and no qualms with the players who came in. In particular, you know, Doc starts probably because Semedo wasn't up against his kryptonite, so I thought he might as well give him a night off. Santi Bueno comes in. I remember sort of changing midfield and up front with Doyle, Bellegarde and Hwang. So when you look at it on paper, there isn't necessarily a natural kind of formation that drops into that.
No, that's what I was struggling with the most when I saw the lineup is how are we going to line up? There seemed to be an awful lot of midfielders and defenders and Hwang who I didn't want anywhere near the squad after the warm-up and the going down in the warm-up against Sheffield United and him coming back looking rusty. I know we'll touch on it later. But, yeah, it seemed very midfielder-heavy. It felt like Pep had turned up and done one of his madness where he plays 15 left-backs or something just to try something different. I was really interested to see how we'd marry up the midfield to Hwang, basically. I was worried he was going to be on an island by himself at the top, running a lone furrow, which at times it kind of is what happened.
I mean, I put it in the group chat, didn't I? I said it looked like 3-4-1-2 for me.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it'd be Lamina who'd be the furthest forward of the midfielders for some reason. I thought it'd be Doyle, but and it kind of turned out that way. But I wasn't that bothered. I mean, we've got all the red zone and all that kind of stuff, and where people. The sports science things of when people are at breaking points, ironically, doesn't count for Wang. But people need a rest, especially against ahead of Saturday as well, which we'll come on to later. I didn't really have a problem with it because, I mean, it's not like we were resting Cunha. And I thought, well, if you look at what we were going to go against Brighton with, especially to start the game with, it's not the kind of game for flair against them lot because you kind of go in the polar opposite of what they do because their silliness and their nonsense that they get away with all the time. We can't do that. So to match them up with a bit of physicality and a bit of pressing, you didn't really not necessarily want Sarabia and Neto on there from the start. And it's a risk, and he got away with it.
I think the thing I realised kind of going into kickoff was I didn't have an issue with the players who came in, like, you know, in terms of sort of a drop-off in quality. Yeah, you know, obviously Neto dropped one of our highest performing players and everything. And I wasn't even too concerned that there wasn't like a really kind of natural formation that's either fitted for ones we played previously or what. What was the slight worry for me is because I kind of trust Gary O'Neill at this point, that he's got an idea, he's got a tactic in mind. It's just whether players would be adaptable enough to be able to do it on the night. But it's like you say, like, Lamina seemed to play really far forward. He was almost in that right wing position, effectively where Neto was sometimes, or at least sort of that side to kind of keep Brighton a bit occupied on that flank more. But they knew exactly what they were doing. And we just started the game exactly how you wanted it to. And it was just like the perfect storm that there's a quarter final on the line. We know he's going to, you know, play who we got to play, and started like a house on fire and scored with inside the first few minutes.
The energy levels, I think Stu's bang on with what we needed to do was match, try and counter attack their, it's ridiculous. Their passing from the back is playing from the back, and what did you call it, Steve, the other day? Dicking about at the back. And that is what they did, and it was really quickly pounced upon, wasn't it? It's probably why Gary O'Neill probably went for Hwang, because he is a willing runner at the very least. And what a finish from Lamina, by the way.
I think if it wasn't for the flappy hands of Jason Steele, Bellegarde for the goal. I don't think it's talked about his turn on, you know, basically the halfway line to just completely took two players out of the game. And I know it felt for me like Isson, who's not had necessarily lots of criticism, but he is very patchy at best. And it felt like a real game for him. He really stepped up, and yeah, the cross should have probably been intercepted. But I thought it was brilliant. Yes, I thought he put in a really good display.
He did to start the game. I thought he kind of fell back into his normal ways. But he's almost like a kind of traditional throwback winger, where he can be so awful and so amazing in the same game, or in the same 10-minute spell. But that's exactly what we thought we were getting with him. Someone who had close control, who can run with the ball and put a cross in. And he did it within 90 seconds.
Yeah.
But playing him on the left works better than playing him in the middle or on the right. So
definitely, I think keeping him out on the left works. And it wasn't just that moment. Yeah, he had a couple of really good spells for me. But yeah, when I saw the cross came in, I thought, oh, okay. And then it dropped. And you're right, Lamina, I don't think it's appreciated like how much he had to do to score that goal. Because obviously he had to like win the ball in the first place, and then like as he's on the ground, out muscle somebody, just an absolute monster, isn't he?
Yeah, he's having a goal scoring season for the ages, isn't he? This season, and there was a definite ploy. It did look as though, from when he was substituted, it looked like he had a good 60 to 65 minutes in him, and that seems to be how he was playing. That he knew at some point he was going to come off regardless. And he was playing basically number 10. And what we've seen, I think Bellegarde's season was epitomised in the whole game yesterday, where we saw that flair in the flashes that he's got the Cunha ability to drive forward with the ball and, you know, gain hard yards, like in rugby terms, to gain hard yards by holding onto the ball. But, he then drifted out of the game, I think, which Stu was touching upon. But what we need to do is we need to give him, if we can, a run of games to play to see where he fits into this team and into this side, because he doesn't naturally seem to fit Gary O'Neill's system that we usually play. So we need to either make him a square peg for a square hole, or we need to find somewhere else to play him, I guess.
Yeah. I was going to say, quickly back on Lamina in terms of his goal-scoring return this season. I mean, he's now scored for Wolves, I believe, more than any other club in his career, which, you know, considering he's played 45 games for Wolves, and he's now got 5 goals. Nice, I think it was about, he scored 3 goals for Southampton, he scored twice, Juve 3 times, at Marseille twice. And, you know, he was playing like best part of, I think he's played for all of those clubs more than he's played for Wolves as well. Again, he's just a player who's just evolved and matured over the last few years. And like, it feels like he is just peaking in a Wolves shirt. And it's rare to get that from someone who's a bit later on in their career and stuff like that. And you can just see how loved he is as well. Just an absolute dude, isn't he?
He reminds me a bit, not in how they are as players, but when we bought Moutinho and people thinking and looking at his age and thinking, oh, is he over it now? And you think, oh, well, he's been over there. He hasn't really done much. And then he comes here and he's one of the best, well, beyond the thing there, on the wall, the only player name that I'll have there because he was the best player I've ever seen at Wolves, regardless of anything else. Joe Moutinho was amazing. Remember Mario Lemina coming in at 29 and having this. I mean, we're not putting him out to pasture like you did to Craig Dawson every week, Rich. He's got about.
Hang on. Let's not skip ahead on the running order because you know I've got a section on Santi Bueno.
Yes, for the Santi Bueno lovers, and we all are. In the comments, just wait.
I don't dislike Dawson.
Wait, we'll go in the minute.
Just. Reel me in.
But Lamina's a breath of fresh air. And I don't think you'd have the club that we have, and I don't think we'd have the results that we have if we didn't have someone like him here.
Yeah. He seems to have grown up, I think, as you said, Rich, from when we saw him at Southampton and maybe being a leader, maybe being slightly older. He's just matured, it looks like, and he seems like, without trying to sound too corny, like he's found a bit of a home. Mm-hmm. At Wolves, yeah. a bit like we saw with Neves, where we saw him grow up, you know, and become sort of, you know, an honorary, you know, Wolverhampton born and bred kind of boy. We're seeing it now with Lamina just slightly later on in his life, where he seems to have found a home, found a system that suits him, a manager that supports him. And, you know, he's not the captain, but, you know, he is in all but name. He is the heartbeat of the team, isn't he? And they all seem to love him. So, long may it continue.
I'll say, A definite shout out to someone like Matt Hobbs with it all, because if you think that, okay, yeah, throw Dawson into this, but you know, you've got your captain in Kilman and Dawson at the back, you've got Sarr, who is vocal, in midfield you've got Lamina, who is very clearly a leader, whether it's, you say, all but name banned, or, you know, very clearly a vocal presence in that changing room, and Mateus Kuna, who you know, was basically a cheerleader on his night off for the club. And when you still see him afterwards, down sort of giving big bear hugs in the same way John Ruddy did a few years back, that is a spine of your team. Mm-hmm. On paper, that is quite, you know, and you don't need everyone to, you know, be your leader and whatever, but like, that is a solid spine of your team of players who, you know, are very clearly willing to like live and die on 90 minutes on the pitch. And just he personifies, I think, Lamina, what you want as a football fan sometimes. And he gives you the guts, he gives you, you know, everything, but he's got the skill as well. And it's like, you need to work to score those goals. It's the same as João Gomes a couple of weeks ago. And it seems like there's that worry of how we do without Kuna and having that bit more intelligence, a bit of a presence in the box and a goal scorer. And I said it about João Gomes against Spurs, when I was like, you know, he heeded the call. We needed our players and we needed our midfielders to step up, didn't we? And it was Gomes against Spurs, and it was Lamina last night. Because Maybe it's because we've been trained watching Neves and Moutinho for several years, but we're not used to, it's long since the days of Dave Edwards have we seen our midfielders busting a gut to get 8 yards out from goal, and it feels like that's tactically led and the players are buying into it to actually kind of, you know, have the belief and stuff like that. It's like, yeah, we're having to play in a slightly different system now, so I don't care who it is, but one of you needs to give those numbers into the box and have that support. And, you know, because it turns out if you get players forward, you're more likely to score goals. But yeah, fantastic start to the game. And I wasn't massively impressed by Brighton, but they did grow into that game. But Wolves held firm and we kept them at arm's bay for a lot of that time. And when they were getting forward, and it felt like there was lots of neat little tricks, but just we kept doing the absolute fundamental basics and just pushing them wide and, you know, very much protecting Sarr's goal.
It was like the Spurs game. It was, you know what I mean? It was, everyone looks at the possession and all their silliness and you think, oh, they've battered us. It's just the whole Brighton thing that they can't score. But they had a few headers and the keeper not being able to put it in the net. And that's about it. So I didn't get dirty. I mean, he had time to have a little chat with the fans behind the goal. You know what I mean? For all their passing and for all their possession, they didn't do anything. And this is what it gets my back up a bit over and over again. I don't watch them anymore because they annoy me. And I've got nothing in the fight. I don't care what Brighton do, but I can't bear it. It drives me insane because it's passing for passing's sake a lot of the time, and they didn't get anywhere with it. And we were so resilient. And you don't swap. You know, here's your chance. You don't swap out Craig Dawson just have some bloke who hardly plays just slot in there like he's never been away. That shouldn't happen. We should. You've got to be defensively sound and have banks of five if you listen to their fans. But if you're sitting there being disciplined, you don't mix, you don't replace your central defender for some bloke who don't play very often and expect it to work, and it worked perfectly. And I think Santi Bueno is a player. I know there's a lot of people in the comments saying he should play, and he probably should, and he probably will next year. He'll probably start the season, I'd imagine. But Craig Dawson was excellent last week at Sheffield United.
Yeah, yeah.
So there's your problem, and it's a good one to have. We've had years of no backup whatsoever, and then we've got backup in midfield, we've got backup in defence, we've got no strikers, but we can't have everything. But we nullified them, exactly like we did to Spurs, and they had no answer.
I mean, go on, Ed.
No, just that their passing was... I'm similar, Stuart. I don't pick out Brighton games to watch. There's a lot of sidewards, a lot of backwards passing that the media seems to hype up a lot for whatever reason. I don't know if it's because De Zerbi looks like he's from the Backstreet Boys, but the hardest that Sarr worked yesterday was running to go and console Hwang. They're more toothless than we are up front. I love Danny Welbeck, but if you're asking a very old in footballer's terms, Danny Welbeck, to come on and change the game in the second half, We never looked flustered, really. There was a few, like you said, a few headers and the steal chance at the end, which we'll talk about. But there was nothing really of any note in either box for most of the game. It was, we sat in, they passed it sideways. We sat in, they passed it sideways. It was if it was on iPlayer for a reason, right? Because both teams were playing as if they know that the cup's important. But there's also a game on Saturday to think about as well, Sunday.
Yeah, and I think it is tricky, and it's good problems to have for the players who come in step up. It's like, look at Tommy Doyle. You know, he had a great run of form at the end of last year, start of this year, with Lamina being absent, Gomez being injured, and he really kind of looked like he quite cemented his place, and then João Gomez comes in and sets the world alight again. And when I saw the formation, I was like, oh, brilliant, Doyle's in. And then you're like, well, who's that going to get the best out of? But again, Tommy Doyle, man of the match from BBC. And it doesn't happen by accident sometimes. Let's talk Santi Bueno before I kind of eulogise about the midfield again. You're right, Stu. He does just step up. And it doesn't look bothered or phased. It did help last night, I do think, for all of those defenders, that Brighton didn't start a striker. And them going for it's not a false nine. They just didn't play a striker.
Like, they're too cool for that.
Yeah, there is like a level where I do find it a bit frustrating when you see teams who it's a false nine. It's like, no, especially when you've got Danny Welbeck on the bench as well. Because it does make a big difference to all that. But again, just he did everything right again. And it feels like for Bueno, he is literally waiting for one of our defenders to get injured or suspended at this rate.
The depth chart is good, isn't it, with the centre-backs? And he looked assured when he had to. He never looked flustered. He's as tall and as strong as Dawson and quicker. The only thing, Dawson, we did tweak it, didn't we, against Sheffield United, when he was left isolated a little bit at the start of the game, wasn't he, with some of their balls over the top. But he looked comfortable enough on the ball as well for me, Santi Bueno, and I think that's important for that middle of the three. You need someone that's got the ability to play the ball and not just pass it sideways, or I'm not expecting the Cody raking balls, but you know, Dawson's been doing them recently himself, hasn't he? So it's in all of their lockers. They're all professional footballers for a reason, right? But there was a couple of times he's just stepped in, took the ball away and recycled possession. He was a 7 out of 10 comfortable last night. He never looked out of place, even when they changed it up and sort of brought on a stronger centre forward. He looked absolutely assured, and he could fit in any three of those positions and it would work, because we'd shuffle it around. If Toti has to go, Kilman goes left, Santi can go right. He seems to perfectly fit a three, and he looks as though he's got enough about him to play in a four if he has to.
Yeah, I mean, that's going to obviously, I guess, be the next big step for Wolves, is can they go for four at the back, which multiple managers have now tried and
we don't
failed.
We've scored more goals. We've scored more goals in the back five again than under the Bruno revolution.
Yeah, yeah.
Which was the whole point of putting play the back four and getting rid of Cody in the first place.
Three slash five at the back doesn't necessarily mean that you don't attack either.
That's what I mean. It's not a back five, is it? It's hardly ever a back five.
No.
It's a back four most of the time anyway, because Nuri's got his own little special area.
He just leaves.
He's just got the left side of the pitch at this point. I mean, there's one sort of clip where, you know, it's effective doing keepy ups over a place and just doesn't look bothered or phased. He's just in his own little world, just absolutely doing tricks, and I love him.
He just messed that header up as well.
Yeah. I was going to say, the other thing with Santi, seemingly when he had the perfect chance to score, getting it quite literally, again, ironically doing a Brighton, trying to pass it in, like just square it across the box rather than just poke it anywhere towards the goal. And it was in, which was a bit of a shame. And my other thing, I guess, looping back to our midfielders and where Tommy Doyle, I think, stood out was, yeah, the defence did play well. But they were very well protected by Gomez and by Doyle and by Lamina. My small point on Tommy Doyle, my hot take, he's unassumingly hard. I think if you punched him in the face, I don't think he'd feel it. But you look at him on first, you just go, oh, he's probably not like a hatchet man. But I reckon he'd do well in a scrap.
You're saying he's from Chatsworth? Richard's never seen Seamus, has he? In his life.
You know what? I've only watched the US one. I know.
Oh, for God's sake.
I know. That's awful. I know. It was one of those where I missed it when it first came out, because, side note, I was slightly probably too young for it when it came out, because I'm not as old as you. Yeah. And then it's on a to-do list. All right, it's on the watch list. I'm sorry.
Matt's been watching it as well recently because he was as well too young to watch it at the time. And I said, well, it depends. I mean, it's been a long time since I watched Shameless, but I loved it. It was excellent.
Yeah, it was on the time.
Yeah, it's probably.
Up? Does it hold up? I don't know. If I just try and binge it now,
I haven't watched it since it came out.
It was iconic when it came out. Don't get me wrong. Yeah,
it's probably like Phoenix Nights, where you watch it and you think, yeah, this would never be broadcast now.
Yeah, I was going to say I don't think Phoenix Nights is necessarily as. Sometimes I think comedies sometimes have a pocket in time, don't they? Great comment on YouTube by Paul. Tommy Doyle definitely listens to Oasis before games. Yeah,
I think that's probably all he listens to, I'd imagine.
Yeah. Yeah, again, I just thought it was fantastic. He does just the absolute fucking basics perfectly, and it's sort of all you want from a midfielder sometimes. But yeah, again, just to like, he doesn't necessarily look the biggest or the strongest, but he never shirks, he never hides. And when he gets on the ball, you know what you're doing with it.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to waste possession. I think that's an important... If we're going to play those three midfield for whatever reason, whenever Gary O'Neill decides that we need three midfield, it's good to know that he... Although João Gomez's on-ball playing is getting better, Tommy Doyle is already better than him at that. So yeah, it'd be good to have that outlet that centre-half sometimes need to just drop it in there and know that it's going to be taken care of right foot, left foot. And very rarely backwards as well, which I think was important. Not necessarily always forward, but, you know, it always seems progressive what he's trying to do with the ball. His first turn, he reminds me a lot of Paul Scholes towards his latter end of the career when every touch seemed deliberate and it was always forward first. And if you can't go forward, how can we keep possession and make the most of the game? He has the aura of a kid that's going to go on to be able to boss games if things go his way.
Yeah, I think that's it. It's like his pass might not necessarily be a direct forward pass, but it's like when he passes it, you're like, even if it's like, it sounds stupid, he's knocked it out to Ait Nouri or he's knocked out to Smeda or Doc. It's like you go, oh, hang on, he's passed right in such a way that it's creating tempo or it's moving them forward to kind of get everyone else moving forward. And he's doing that in his early 20s.
Yeah, it's not a pass for a pass's sake, like Stu was talking about with the Brighton players. It's purposeful, isn't it?
Mm. Yeah, it's like he's seen one pass ahead as well a lot of the times. Mm. He's playing 3D chess in his head.
Yeah, and it's bonkers because they say you look at him and he just looks like a bit of a scruffy lad and he's going to kind of do all the doggies and everything like that. And yeah, we've had a couple of comments regarding him. He did come on, but Boubacar Traoré definitely needs some love because he's kind of that fourth man up and it's not a disservice to him because he's not a million miles off in terms of quality. When he came on, he put himself about and everything. And when I saw him, he was coming, I was like, he's there to fuck shit up. it's not about keeping the ball when he came on. It was about him just breaking up play. And I think there was a couple of points where, you know, he probably, he did his job to a T as well.
He's like a wrecking ball. He's just a ball of chaos. It's fun. He's one of them where he is. You know what he is. He comes on, he does his thing, probably going to get booked, and then goes away again. You see him in 3 months' time. But yesterday, he looked more focused than he'd been for ages. And I think that's probably why he looks up. And we're having comments there that he was actually good last night. He wasn't just headless chicken. He actually did his job properly.
No, he's definitely got something about him more than just being a very physical player. Like, there's definitely a player behind the energy, should we say. You know, again, Dan Lamb on YouTube. We have a nasty team of battlers, which have we ever really had? And realistically, not in a good long time. Yeah. I was going to say, Stu, for the audio listeners pointing to, I'm assuming his 02 to 04 kit
instant,
there.
Instant,
I was going to say,
instant, really, Cameron.
I'm really hoping it's not half of those other ones. but you're right, it's great to have that kind of streak in the team, but also have that guile as well. Going into the second half, Hwang sort of, I saw live as well, where you sort of see him just before kickoff, he's sort of feeling his hamstring, and unfortunately he goes off part way through the second half, and considering we've already without Kuna, it's a bit of a warning sign. According to Liam Keane, he's not looking to be fit for the weekend against Newcastle. Do you think there was cause for him to come off earlier, or is it kind of just one of those things? Because it did, Stu, you mentioned about red zones before, but the injuries started to pile up towards the end of that game, or players being forced to come off.
I mean, I would have took him off after 10 minutes. You could see he was, after the third attempt of trying to control the ball with his chest and it bouncing half a mile away, and you think, okay, fine. It's going to be one of these nights for him. But then he'd normally chase back and make up for it. And he wasn't moving, and there was balls played through to him, and he wasn't chasing it. And you think, well, if you're having a bad day anyway, but then you're not going to make up with it with effort, then why are you on the pitch for? There's clearly something not right with you, so get off. And it would have been bold for it to do something that early, but like Ed said, he wasn't right the weekend, so he's not going to be right 3 days later, 4 days later. And yet again, I mean, this, we know whose fault this is, because we're patching players up because we've got no choice. Wait for them Kents to come out before I can go full rage mode, but if we're in that situation where now we've got Bellegarde as our only striker, and Sarabia and Neto are the other two options, and that is it, then we are in the shit, are we? And
whoa. Don't forget about Trisal Tiger.
Yeah, well, he's not going to play, is he? Matt Doherty up front is going to happen before Nathan Fraser gets a run in the team.
It was telling that Fraser wasn't given the run out, considering Hwang, what we said about Sheffield United. And I also chose to have a hot meal last night instead of going to the game. So you saw on the TV him stretching his left hamstring on the ball as he was about to take the kickoff. And I said then, well, he's not going to make it past 47 minutes at this rate, because if you're stretching out waiting to take the kickoff, then something's...
And I was going to say, it was very noticeable, not just like I've just spent 20 minutes inside sort of thing. It was a very telling, something doesn't quite... You know, in all of our high levels of footballing prowess, that, you know, that's like, ooh, not quite sure about that. And I don't know, for me, like, a hamstring's not something, like, if you tweak your hamstring, anything to do with it, it's not something you can just run off, is it?
No.
You're only going to make it worse.
Yeah. You're only going to make it worse.
You can't give it an injection or anything like that. It's not the same as like with your joints and things. As soon as you feel it, I don't know. Hindsight's a wonderful thing. And maybe if we'd have taken him off at half time, maybe Brighton would have smelt blood a bit more. But it's frustrating, you say, considering, you know, Gomez goes off with cramp, Lamina goes off as well. Towards the end, it's tricky because we don't have a huge squad. We're doing better in certain areas to accommodate it, but that forward line, and ironically, one thing I kind of I did think, you know, particularly when Hwang came off, because at that time, was it Sarabia and Neto came on? I was like, actually, you know what, I wasn't too concerned, because I thought, if we concede, we are ending this game with a strong lineup. Whereas if we, let's say, had Wolves of old, and we were, you know, that drop off in quality down the depth chart, I'd have been more worried. But to give Neto half an hour isn't too bad. Problem is, Hwang's fitness at the moment is only half an hour fitness. Lamina's fitness was only for an hour. anyway, and there's only kind of so many players you can do the mental maths on for that. But you know, as Danny P said, you know, when we're kind of going into the final stages and he chucks on Dawson and Semedo, it's like, okay, this is going to be a formation in it. And you know, effectively Nelson Semedo drops into centre mid, and it was kind of all hands on deck, just seeing the game out. And when I saw Steele coming up for a corner, despite the very low percentage of goalkeepers who score from corners, does anyone else still just absolutely brick it? I don't want to have the embarrassment of it.
The Jimmy Glass moment.
Yeah.
I never really think about it because it's always funny because they never normally get anywhere near it.
Yeah, exactly. It's something where I see them come forward and you're like, hang on, this is just an unknown variable. This is something we haven't experienced before. But you know, realistically, they never know what they're doing.
No.
It didn't look that bad on telly, but from where I was, obviously from the other side of the pitch, it wasn't that evident that it was him at first, because if you look at his shirt was it's dark grey and the back of the Brighton player's shirt is black. And after six Guinness,
which is also black,
yeah, and a bit of at a glance, I thought, okay. And then you looked up and I thought, oh, that was a keeper. And I thought, oh, that's a strange thing to have been allowed to happen, but there we are. Little aside, but yeah, you don't, I mean, I've never seen it happen live in what, nearly 30 years, and you'd expect it to at this point. But you just know one day it's going to happen. I mean, the day that if Sarr scores ever, shirts off.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everyone. Yeah. He'll rip his own beard off, I think, if he does that.
Oh, I dread to think. But yeah, Wolves, of course, went through. And as it was kind of the draw was done pre-game, which I don't like personally. I think you should just wait until all the teams are in. We have got Coventry City in the next round. In terms of teams who are left, it's Man United versus Liverpool, Chelsea, Leicester, Man City, Newcastle. It's hard not to dream, isn't it, fellas? When you look at that, I mean, we got the best draw you could probably get. I was going to say, no disrespect to Coventry. We're going to give them quite a lot of disrespect over the next couple of weeks, especially as they knocked out George Ellacobi's Manchester United, right?
I mean, I've already started with talking their main statue being of a stripper. So public indecency doesn't matter to Godot, does he? Fucker. Who cares? Can't even have a prince, can they? Wankers. No. It's kind of unnerving though for me, because before the game, when the draw was on, as soon as we came out and then Coventry came out, everyone went mental, like proper cheers went up, and you think, this is not really what you want to be doing. We know what we like against bad teams who sit in. We can't do it normally. But yeah, if you're gonna do something, if you're gonna do something in the cup, you've got to beat teams like Coventry. It doesn't matter. It's a no. If we don't win, if Coventry beat us, then it's a disaster. It's an embarrassment. And you can clip this out and you can come at me. Or it's an embarrassment for a team that we've got now. As long as there's no injuries and no nonsense happens in the next 2 weeks. If we go in there with the squad that we've got at the minute, that's easily good enough to beat Coventry. I know they've got a striking form, whatever. They're still mid-table championship team. Well, pushing for the playoffs maybe, but still, it's a league below. They'd finish probably 17th at best if they got promoted this season next year. So you've got to know the team you're playing against. We can't be scared of fucking Coventry. No. It's just not on.
It's the draw we wanted, right? They're fed Brummies as well. That's also get that straight. So it's the draw we wanted. It's at home. You know, I'm ready to go and get a ticket for that one. I mean, I couldn't make it to last night's game, but I'll miss a meal and go to this one. and it's time to ramp up and to get excited for Wembley. You have to get excited for Wembley now. I mean, we are safe in the league. We are making the best of the situation we've got. We've got a very good up and coming manager. It's exciting. Why not just let yourselves get a bit excited and think that we're at least getting to, we've got a very good chance to get to the semi-finals, the best chance possible out of all of those teams.
Mm.
And that's exactly what we wanted.
Yeah. And I look at it and I go, well, we're odds on to get through to the semi-final, which is fantastic. And you're like, well, I've got to play either Man United or Liverpool. You know, but that's a lucky in a way that both of them two have got to go. you know, Chelsea, Leicester. Now, Leicester could, you could see some Leicester doing something there. And Man City versus Newcastle. Stranger things have happened. And if we were somehow in a semi-final draw with Wolves, Man United, Leicester and Newcastle, that'd be bonkers. But then, you know, we could be in a draw with Wolves, Liverpool, Chelsea and Man City. And either way, because of how Wolves are playing at the moment, you do just dare to dream, don't you? I'd say a couple of quick shout outs and fancast announcements. We launched a competition for a retro wool shirt via Kitbag and Fanatics. So big congratulations to Will Bowen. We'll be in contact to arrange that. Commiserations to anyone who didn't win. If you do want to buy one, vote, if you go to kitbag.evy.net/fancast, you can access their retro tops replica kits, like the ones on screen at the moment. They also do designs and also training gear as well, so definitely go check them out. Also via Fanatics, you can get 20% off when you spend more than £49, 30% off when you spend more than £79 when you use the code word goal as well. So a couple of offers for you lovely Fancast fans as well. Now, football, as I mentioned, doesn't stop. But yeah, we're in the quarterfinals. We're smelling Wembley. We are 90 minutes away from some very overpriced burgers. But before then, we do actually have to play Newcastle, who are also in the quarterfinals and had a tricky night themselves. Went through on penalties against Blackburn. So it's going to be interesting, I think, to see how they sort of turn out in the end. Because, I don't know, yeah, our players were tired, but they've done 120 minutes as well. So I think it's going to be a weary legs game at the weekend for us.
Yeah, I'm not expecting anything now after that. I mean, I was tired watching it, let alone running around. Mm. And it was mentally draining more than physically draining as well, I think, because the concentration level to keep them at bay for that long, it's got to be taxing on them. And we've seen it before. We haven't played well in the last two games either. I know we've been in form technically, but the last two performances haven't been brilliant compared to what we could do against Spurs and things like that. But Newcastle is the kind of game where they will attack us. So we're back in our natural habitat again of defending and hitting people on the break. Newcastle, good point there. Newcastle did get to penalties, so they could have a bit of more fatigue than us, days rest and all that kind of thing. But yeah, I was all up for this game, thinking, yeah, let's go there. I mean, we've got a few Newcastle mates. I listened to a couple of Tune Under podcasts from Australia. Share for them. They're also the same thing about Newcastle's midfield is terrible at the minute, and well, that's exactly where our strong point is. So that gives me a bit more hope for it. And Manny the Mad Lunatic walking there. If anyone's going to be tired, it's him. But saying all that, I'll take a 0-0 now. 4 points from the next two league games, Newcastle and Fulham. 4 points would be superb, especially after what happened last night.
Yeah, the only thing to not sleep on is how shattered Newcastle have looked for the last 3 months. Anyway, Eddie Howe's playing with 12 players, isn't he? And one of them's an actual child. So they are going to be as fatigued as we are. And they've looked more tired over the last few weeks themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, barring that game against Sheffield United, they've you know, there's been a lot of Dan Byrne is up for, you know, up for grabs maybe for Pedro Neto to attack him if he plays Dan Byrne on the left, or if he plays Livramento, then who knows. But there's been some uncharacteristic mistakes from Trippier recently because he's playing shattered. You know, that they've only really got Bruno Guimaraes in the middle, who's one rash tackle away from a yellow card. So I watched the Blackburn game and he seemed to be, he did one ridiculous challenge that he got. He was very lucky to not get booked for. But he looks like he's pulling out of challenges a little bit to not get that booking. So I just, they might be shattered, but like Stu said, I'd take a 0-0 now and walk away and get ready for Fulham.
Yeah, I'd be, you know what, it keeps the status quo as well. And that's kind of, I guess, my big thing is that...
I thought you was going to... I thought that was going to be a link into songs.
Oh, if only. If only. I'm too far gone to try and drop in musical lyrics. We had this conversation the other week, didn't we, about seeing if we could just slip in any Hamilton references. But we're actually above Newcastle in the table. All right, it's by a point. But if we are able to kind of keep them to a draw, just maintains it as much as anything else, rather than, yeah, it sounds bad, but losing's obviously worse, but it just kind of keeps things moving for us, and more importantly make sure Newcastle doesn't kind of climb back ahead of us as well.
Yeah, I think after yesterday, it's not losing that game is not going to be the absolute disaster that it would have been, because we've got another focus now. And I think there was another comment earlier on saying, would you take slipping down the lead to get into a FA Cup final?
Yeah.
Fuck yes, I would.
Yeah, 1,000%.
Yeah.
We just haven't had one.
Yeah.
Like, my mom was 3 years old last time we were in a FA Cup final. So it's not even generational. It's multi-generational thing to happen. And we'd probably lose it anyway, but still, you got to get there. If we finished 13th and got to the FA Cup final, it'd be the best year ever.
I'm
not over the 2019, and I'm not even over 1998 yet. So I'm happy to not be over something that happened in 2024 as well, on the off chance that we don't have to get over it.
Yeah. I mean, my only fear is if we got to a final, it was devastating coming back from Watford at Wembley.
But that was Watford, though. We thought we had a chance, and we did have a chance, and Nuno fucked it up.
You know, Wolves will fuck it up.
Well, he took Jota off, I'm still.
But that's why that hurts so much, because if we're going into a final against Man City or Liverpool or Chelsea or Man United, yeah, we've beaten them all over the last few years. But realistically, we're going there as underdogs, so it wouldn't be a surprise if we lost. It wouldn't be 3 hours of silence on the way back, feeling like you've been brisked in public. You know what I mean? That was one of the worst experiences ever. Not being brisked in public.
but that was second worst. Yeah, behind.
I'm fully skinned up for anyone who needs to know that. this has got to turn. But it's after the hour, or it's nearly the hour. That's why.
Yeah, I was going to say.
We're after the watershed, Stuart. It's fine.
That's why that was so bad, because it was against Watford. I think it wouldn't be the same again, even if it was a final, and even if we were disappointed. It'd be sad and horrible, but nothing's ever going to compare to that. That was an all-time low.
I must say, if we somehow get Liverpool in the final, actually, you know, even if we get Liverpool in the semi-final and we somehow beat them, pissing on Jurgen Klopp's farewell chips does make me feel very excited.
He's the worst loser as well in the world, so that would be fun for that reason as well.
And then like, Sting's celebration in front of him.
I mean, my only other concern is, look, we got to get past Coventry first, and we shouldn't be thinking, it's a bit, you know, getting ahead of ourselves, I know, but who cares. What's Gary O'Neill going to wear if we get to Wembley? Because he's been a tracksuit manager, and I'm not having tracksuits at Wembley.
See, when I said this last week about the hoodie thing, I kind of want him to. I kind of want him to wear the same thing. You know, when I said in the last round, I said I'm going to have to wear that hat, even though it's really, really warm. I did it again last night, and there was at times I was sweating. It was that hot because it's a winter hat, and it was like 9 degrees last night, so it was pretty mild.
That's a real fan.
But I'm going to have to do it now. I don't care. It's going to have to be done. I mean, more than likely, we're going to be 12 o'clock kickoff on a Sunday anyway, looking at when the times of the game are.
Yeah,
definitely.
We're the unattractive tie for the TV purposes. Put us on at 12. No one gives a fuck, do they? No one cares. No.
So, I mean, we're not going to be the Saturday kickoff.
Well, we can't be, can we? Because either Man City or Man United have got to be on the Saturday because they can't both play in Manchester on the same day.
Yeah.
So one of them has got to be playing on the Saturday. The only other way is if the police make Man United Liverpool at 12, but then Sky will say, well, just put it at 2 like they normally do. So we're not going to be half 4, are we? That's the main thing. It's going to be early or early afternoon Sunday.
Yeah, I reckon we'll be the 2 o'clock one. I think we'll be the sandwich one on the Sunday, personally. We will see. We'll see. In terms of other games going on this weekend, just to wrap everything up, we're playing Newcastle on Saturday, obviously, at 3 o'clock. In terms of some of the other 3 o'clock Saturday games, you've got Spurs Palace, Forest Liverpool, Brentford Chelsea, Everton West Ham, David Moyes Derby, Fulham Brighton. Evening kickoff is Luton Villa, and Sunday you've got Burnley Bournemouth, Manchester Derby, and Sheffield United Arsenal. Any of those games piquing your interest at all?
I mean, I'm annoyed that, I mean, Forest Liverpool's low key, they hate each other, which is quite hilarious. I'm annoyed that that's 3 o'clock at the same time. And the David Moyes Derby, that's always entertaining. In a kind of sad, sick way. I don't know. Other than obviously the Manchester Derby, which is, it's always a good fun. Seeing Gary Neville meltdown every year. It's not the best for TV, is it? Looking at that. No. I mean, I'll be at Newcastle anyway, so I won't see anything other than our game on the Saturday. So looking forward to Burnley Bournemouth. It's we're in existence.
Yeah, there's no standouts there. Is, I mean, how many will Arsenal score at Sheffield United is probably the better the weekend, right? Or that's the Monday game, isn't it? So the better this game week, because Sheffield United are on minus, what, 1,000? I don't know how many they're on a minus of now, but they are on a hiding to nothing. It's only good old Wolves that can give them a win this season, isn't it? So, yeah, there's none of those jumped out, and there's quite a few dead rubbers in there. It looked to Brighton. Brighton have got, who did Brighton have? That looked like Fulham. A dead game. Yeah, Brighton Fulham. Have got Fulham. Yeah, it would be interesting maybe for the relegation if Chelsea beat Brentford, bringing Brentford a bit closer, if Everton managed to get some points, and Luton hopefully can beat Villa, just for, it's nice for Villa to lose.
Yeah, and of course, Everton have had their points deduction reduced to 6 points, which has kind of moved them outside of the relegation zone now and given them a little bit of breathing space, which has kind of made it a little bit more interesting. So everyone's kind of, I guess, hoping that Luton can claw back, I think 4 points to kind of make it a bit more tricky with the likes of Fulham and Brentford as well. But it's added a new dynamic at the bottom of the table, hasn't it?
I mean, Everton will probably have another 6 put back on again.
Yeah.
With the second breach.
Which and is, Forest.
Yeah, and exactly. Forest, right. And I know that on the price of football, they were saying, oh, yeah, because it's another breach, but it's the same offence. So it doesn't matter if it counts in the same 2 years, it's still the same offence. So it should be the same punishment, which they've admitted to doing. So it should be another 6 points at least.
I mean, I couldn't believe that Forest had signed another goalkeeper. During January, when all of this was going on, they're still just throwing the money around like it's Monopoly money. The spectre of FFP is well and truly over that club as well, isn't it?
I mean, I know Matt Turner played yesterday, but poor guy. And if you've watched Married to the Game or The Real Housewives of the Premier League, as it should be called, he seems the only normal bloke out there.
I've only seen the very minor clips of James Tarkowski.
Oh, yeah, looking super awkward.
Which
It's glorious. I watched all six episodes on Friday night. There's no surprise to anyone. Yeah, it's terrible shit, but it's entertaining.
I might have to check it out. Right, let's wrap up today's show. Quickly, though, score predictions for Saturday, gents. Ed, do you want to go first?
Let's go for 3-1-0s in a row.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Stu, how about you?
I mean, the excitement of coming down them stairs after a win. I just don't see. I think it's going to be a drab, boring shit affair. One each, because we... Keeping a clean sheet was a miracle yesterday, because we haven't had one for seemingly ages. But yeah, 1-1, I think.
Yeah. You know, I'm going to go 1-1 as well. I think we've got enough finish to get a goal, but I don't quite see us having the legs, nor do I think Newcastle are going to kind of quite blow us out of the water or anything like that either. But fingers crossed, we can get something out of the game. We will be, of course, back on Sunday to talk about it. In the meantime, make sure you keep up to date with all things Wolves Fancast at Wolves Fancast here, there, and everywhere. Make sure, as you've heard throughout the show, you check out the kit bag stuff and Fanatics as well. And until next time, it's goodbye from Stu.
Yeah, but I'm not going
to
say anything bad.
I'll usually go to your last, haven't I?
Yeah. I was just looking at, there's a guy flying over from Melbourne for the Newcastle and Fulham games, Robbie, at Melbourne Wolf. Mm. So if anyone's in Newcastle and sees him, give him a shout out, because he flew all the way. He's literally flew the entire world away to come.
How many meals has he missed for that?
Exactly.
I was going to say, we should probably give a little bit more of a shout out to Manny as well. I know we kind of joke about it. He is like 2/3 of the way there, I think it is now, walking from Wolverhampton to Newcastle, raising money for Venture UK, which is bonkers. It is bonkers what he is doing, but it is a sensational thing he is doing, and is raising a lot of money for charity. So yeah, amazing stuff. My praise to him probably means very little in the grand scheme of things, but you know, whether you're walking to St. James's Park, or you're flying away from, all you know, from the other side of the world or whatever, you know, let's back the boys and everything. I get confused now. So it's a goodbye from Stu again, but you've said your goodbye because you've done your second. So it's goodbye from Ed.
Yeah, just quickly, interesting fact I learned today on another podcast. The first time that the term bellend was used to describe people was on the 1992 version of the internet, and it was about the Albion. So they were all called bellends on the internet in 1992, and it's the first written term use of that term. So maybe we can get that into a chat one day. And goodbye.
That's amazing, and I don't think I've ever had a better ending of a show. It's goodbye for me then. Fuck the Albions.